Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million.
Law and Order, Bags, Stocks, and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Andrew on the board. S&P futures down $1.75. NASDAQ futures down 37. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning, Thomas. How are you today?
I'm doing all right so far. But it's early.
So far, so good. Okay, so you woke up. You weren't in the obits.
Yeah, I looked in the obits and I didn't see my name, so here I am at work.
All right.
But then again, I just went by the window on the way down and said he was so far so good, too. I think that's what he said. Something
that, that plan will end abruptly.
Yes. I didn't hang in there for the home runoff last night.
No, I fell asleep before it, too. So I saw some clips of it this morning just to see, because I was surprised. I just, looked to see who won. It's just like hockey having a shootout. Okay, probably better than dragging it on for the rest of the night.
I think my was with somebody who was big time on the over in the Nationals, so I think he ended up with a good night. So there you go.
Okay. There you go. Okay.
I think the over was 7.
For both teams combined?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they went way past that.
Well, yeah, I mean, but for a while it was two zip for many innings. He was getting a little worried.
Damn pitchers.
Yeah, no kidding. Those guys, that was pretty, it's more just of a showcase for the best players, which is fine.
I'll be interested to see what happened with Eugenio Suarez. He got hit, like on the pinky finger. He got hit by a pitch. And the reason I'm saying that is because he was like one of the biggest, most sought, most likely to be sought trade prospects before the deadline.
Any break of a bone in the hand is a serious thing.
That's right. For a hitter. And this is why you don't invite White Sox to come and pitch for you.
God. Hey, there's been this. I actually listened. I don't know why. What's the guy's name? He's the one of the conservative. I guess he's a podcast guy, but he's on TV. Was it O'Reilly? He's on TV. He's more than a podcast guy.
Oh, Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't been on TV for years. Probably 10 years now.
Oh, okay. Well, it was.
People might have him on as a guest now and then, and he's. Excuse me, and he probably has resurrected with some kind of podcast, but I only see him on TV ads for something to help you sleep.
I don't need to help sleep in front of a baseball game with the commercials by myself.
Yeah.
Or football or whatever.
Go ahead about O'Reilly, and then I have a question about Atlanta and the All-Star game.
Yeah, my question regarding... O'Reilly, it's not him personally, but he was talking about. I mean, there's this thing with Epstein, and evidently, and I actually wanted to have kind of an expansive conversation with you about this because you are a man with all kinds of experience and have a moral fiber. I know that. I've known you a while, and he was talking about and this is not political. At all from me, because he was just saying that Trump has a real problem in his own mega core group, where this is O'Reilly talking, it's kind of split down the middle, that half of them are just kind of whatever Trump does is okay, but half of them really voted for him to get the alligators out of Washington, and they're absolutely furious over this, you know, hesitation on his part, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if it's him or who it is, go after this, all the people who were down at Epstein's Island. And I had not heard that from anybody that I know is a Trumper, and I know a lot of them. I had not really heard that, Kevin, and I didn't realize it was that big of a deal for him, it appears, right now. It's kind of the itch that won't go away from what I...
I think people expected it to be done, and I don't know what there is to release, so that's, you know, that's part of the equation, too. So I don't know. But first of all, let me tell you where I stand on it, is whatever they have, they should release. Yes, redact victims' names.
Right.
Yeah, do that. But then whatever else they have, just release it. Whether there's a list, whether there's a dossier with a bunch of information about it, I don't care what it is, it should see the light of day. And well, the more so, you know, because the general conjecture is that it was blocked because there's so many CIA type of secrets and things like that, and there probably are. And that would certainly be an explanation for why it keeps getting suppressed. However, if the CIA is involved in going out of its way to compromise people by setting them up with minors, then that should be known too, and that needs to be fixed. So let's not hide our dirty secret here. Let's get it done. But certainly it's the kind of thing that there is some entanglement with the U.S. government in here. We've known that for a long time based on how sentences were levied and so on, and that should see the light of day, and I wish it would. So that's where I come out on it, just so everybody understands my bias in the situation.
Well, I'm going to take, for the purposes of radio, I'm going to sort of take the other side. Not that I don't agree with you, by the way. It's always fun to argue with somebody you agree with, you know. Kevin, we sort of do this all the time. We make these sort of judgments. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily understand that there's these constant, what do you want to use the term, prosecutorial discretion, basically in all walks of life. In parenting, you choose the time to smack the kid on the butt if you do that or don't, or ground him. You don't do it every single time somebody screws up. I mean, when we did this, I was always had a real problem with it, by the way. We did this at the CBOE. You know, who is it that is causing the problem? Then you'll find somebody that isn't connected, and the old fart, I guess for most of the old farts who are now my age, were on the board, you know, they would come up with some foolish line about, well, if we nail this guy enough, it'll be an example to everybody else. That's such a load of crap on earth. You solidified the idea that if you're big enough, nothing ever happened to you. I sent you a long time ago, you probably forgot about it, but I saw it again yesterday on YouTube. Wired Magazine has the phone numbers of virtually all these people that went to that island. I mean, it's right there. I mean, now, you can't get them out of Europe, but I'm sure the governments can. Just for somebody knows what I'm talking about. And I don't know the geography. Was he in the U.S. Virgin Islands or the British? I don't even know, wherever that island was. But there was a big island where you could land a plane on, right? Then you had to take a boat over to Little Island where all the nefarious... So all these idiots that are going there, you know, pompous asses that they are all using their phones on the boat. So Wired Magazine has all these little orange dots and whatever they put together, the screen, of everybody who made a phone call or sent a text. And they wouldn't give out anybody's phone number, but evidently they have them. And they traced where the phone numbers went. And, a bunch of the guys live in New York and some in Detroit. Believe it or not, Kevin, none of them came back to Chicago, which I guess makes me proud. Or maybe we're such a crummy city now, nobody like that lives here.
Nobody even cares about what you can compromise from Chicago.
And a couple are in Denver and a couple in L.A.
Now I'm indignant.
Yeah, me too. It's not like... But then you have to ask yourself, if you're Trump, or whoever is in the White House or everywhere, you sit there and go, what am I going to do with this? I mean, and I listened to another guy on YouTube. He was a neither right nor left guy, and he was convinced that it's not the people they're protecting. They're protecting, and he was convinced that it was some combination, mostly, and he was following the money. Now again, the whole thing's a rumor, you know. So I'm just playing what if here. He said this guy Epstein, and I don't know much about his background. I don't know if you do either, but he wasn't much 15 years ago or 20 years ago, and all of a sudden,
five or some number of years ago,
you know, he's got this kind of dough. He's got a place in Florida. He buys an island, half of the other island, or whatever the hell he owned there, and then he's got a place. Did he have a place in Manhattan too? I think.
Yep.
All of a sudden, the dude's got like all this dough and all these people, and he's, you know, and I'm not accusing Trump of ever going there, but there's a zillion pictures of the two of them arm in arm in New York, which doesn't mean that
side issue in Trump's defense, when he found out that he was involved with underage women, he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago. And
I'm not accusing, but I'm saying
people do love to point to all that, but they don't like to tell the whole story. Not saying that it's your case. I'm just saying I want to make sure that's clear for.
Well, you'd rather not have the picture. I mean, George Bush had a picture with sitting on a sofa with Noriega. I'm sure he'd rather that one than hit the light of day either, right? I mean, it's.
Yeah.
This guy claims that his view of the money, you know, he had some secret deep source, whatever the hell that means. The source was, it was Israeli money tied in the CIA, and they were looking to set people up. Now, Kevin, we went through this in 2008, where we let Bear Stearns fall. The country let Bear Stearns fall. We didn't like them. They didn't help out with some bailout a few years before. They're mainly a Jewish firm. Nobody cared about that. I mean, whatever the reasons why people didn't like Bear Stearns, screw them, we let them fall. And then Drexel. Well, Drexel still had the hangover from, that was the guy who invented the junk bonds and went to jail. And we didn't like Drexel because he competed too much with the big guys. So he let them go. And then all of a sudden it's Goldman Sachs' turn. We can't wait to bail them out. And who is the buffoon from Goldman Sachs that Bush had for the Secretary of Treasury? You never really leave Goldman Sachs. It's like you're never an ex-Marine. You're always a former Marine. You know, and all of a sudden this can't go any further. We got to bail Goldman Sachs out. So what, we paid some other firm with the stipulation that the money, I'm not saying right, wrong, or whatever. My point is,
it is that way. That's all.
These decisions are made all the time. And by the way, I agree with you 100%. And sometimes the light of day has to happen, right? But if you and I are sitting there, can you imagine you and I being co-presidents? Boy, oh boy, jousting all day long. All of a sudden, somebody drops a name on our thing, and now there's...
We would fight in the Oval.
Yeah, there's five captains of industry. There's one of the Queen's kids. And all of a sudden, we sit there and go, look at these 50 names. There's eight senators. There's 12 representatives. There's, you know, four captains of industry. There's three governors. We're going to sit there and go, what the bleep? But not to mention, 15 or 20 people from Saudi, when they're not supposed to be doing anything like that, and all of a sudden they're drinking and messing with little girls down in this place. It's a bomb. I mean, we would have second thoughts. I think we would like to get whoever was in charge of the CIA to try and do something with the CIA. Kennedy tried to do something with the CIA, he got killed. You know, I mean, what are you going to roust up the CIA? Does Trump really want? Does anybody want to do that?
I would say they're probably. Well, Trump already knows what it's like to be on the bad side of the CIA. So, you know, that's a good question about there, and it's a good question where he's. You know, we have to go back and look at his appointments there and see. See who he has in the decision making process. Is it someone he can control? Is it someone, do you always appoint someone who can control you because you really don't have much choice? I don't know. That's you're raising a good point. That, you know, you have to ask, what are the implications of what I'm about to do? And I do get that. It's, you know, what frosts me is if if this really is CIA tied and CIA directed, this is not how I want our country behaving. There are some lines. I know that this the spy business is a dirty business. I know there's a lot of compromises that get made along the way. Some of them, you just have to look at it and go, that's the way it is. That's the way it's going to be. I get all that, but we are not doing this with underage girls.
Well, one of the biggest issues, if this guy's correct, I mean, right now we've got this guy somehow or another, and he's not the first, by the way. Biden was sort of the same place. We're head over heels in love with this Netanyahu guy, and to the point where
Biden did not get along with him at all.
Well, but he still gave money.
Yeah, begrudgingly.
Well, I'm saying, but I mean, this guy, if another 100 Palestinians get killed tomorrow, and we say, if you even mention, God, it seems like a lot, all of a sudden you're anti-Semitic. But there is an undercurrent in this country of these guys are killing way too many people. And it's not anti-Semitic, it's just, what's this guy doing? Trying to keep... I'm saying there is that point of view, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. And Lou will argue me about that. All of a sudden you find out that if, for instance, these guys funded Epstein, what do you think that does to support for this guy, if he was the guy behind it? Maybe people would even read the paper. I don't know, but all these implications are all over the place.
And I haven't read that. Has that been suggested?
Yeah, but well, the one guy, again, this is all rumor. But you know what? When you don't put something out in the light of day, that's what causes rumors, right?
Rumor mill always fills the void. That's basic rule of communication and business. Well, you know, if people like to hold back information about acquisitions and things like that. I'm talking about post-announcement because... You know, the employee, as an employee, your reaction is always, am I still going to have a job? Who's going to be my boss? Where's it going to be? Those kinds of questions. And you guarantee that if you don't fill in those blanks as quickly as possible, your employees are going to fill it in with the grapevine, the rumor mill, whatever you want to call it, and they're going to fill it in with the worst possible scenarios.
Well, I'm saying this is what this guy, he's saying, where did all the money come from? At least follow the money instead of naming the people. And he did some research, and he claimed that from what he found, which, again, is worth that and 25 cents to get your phone call if you can find a payphone. He's like, you know, it looks to me like it's a Israel-CIA, you know, combo. Now, he could be totally wrong, but the fact is it came from someplace. You know, I tell you what, I'm in the business of money. I guarantee you that if money's, even if it's Bitcoin... If money's popping around, these guys can find it, Kevin. It came from somewhere. I mean, somebody wrote the check for this island. Somebody wrote the check for the place in Florida. What bank did it come from? How did the money get in the bank account? I mean, this is not... You can't walk in with $4 million worth of cash anymore. You can't do that. In a person, where the hell would you even find it? But and it, if you wanted to find out, you could. If you wanted to find out... Who bought the puts before 9/11? You could. They didn't want to. Now, who's the they that says we don't want to? And is it the right call or the wrong call? I don't know, Kevin. I just say that they happen all the time. And people, you know, and these are decisions that people make. Sometimes, you know, the CBOE, we used to do that stuff. Do we really want to call out some firm in the Wall Street Journal? It makes them look bad. And by the way, it makes us look bad. Is there any way we can... Just don't let it happen again, and then you run the moral hazard of, they know if nothing's going to happen to me, does your warning mean anything or not? And the answer's probably not. I mean, there's a million iterations to this, and I'm just trying to, you know, kind of bounce off you because you know what I'm talking about. That this is not as hard and fast as you think it is, even though you and I would like it to be, right?
I would certainly like it to be, and... You know, heck, redact every name. You're right. I want to know who was running the op, and I agree with you. That would be my priority, even ahead of individuals being busted and published. So, you know, we have TV shows where they go after child predators. We can turn the files over to them and let them track them down.
Plus, I love Marissa Harrigan. How you pronounce her last name? She's terrific. It's what's her name's daughter, Jane Mansfield's.
Oh,
she's been on that show forever.
Heart attack. Yeah, that's still fiction. You know, it may be based on some realities, but that's still fiction. I'm talking about the ones where they actually conduct stings. I think one of the news shows, I don't think it was 60 Minutes, it was somebody else, but they used to have a regular segment where they would catch these child predators online, and instead of saying you're busted, they would arrange for them to come and meet somebody.
Oh yeah,
meet somebody underage for sex, and then they'd get them on camera. And they'd wiggle and try and explain their way out of it, and then they'd leave the house. You're free to leave, but there's a couple of policemen out there waiting for you.
Well, I don't know if you saw the thing that kind of brought this even more to my attention was the one thing like I said, O'Reilly talking about. You know, Trump has a real. I don't think most people even think about it, but somehow or another, a lot of the mega guys are. They don't like the fact that the Kennedy thing isn't that. You know, that's one of the reasons why they voted for him. And I'm.
It was on the list. I don't think, knowing the voters I know, I don't think it was top of the list or anything like that. But it is a disappointment to a lot of people. I suspect that what we're seeing reported is kind of a little overwrought about how much dissension this is creating in the ranks, because there's a lot of media people who don't want to stir that pot. But I do think you have a lot of Trump supporters who are expecting it.
Well, I mean, it's you never really know why anybody. Of course, people love to say why people voted for somebody. I would not have guessed. If I was a Trump voter and I was flipping a coin, and I bailed out to neither, which I don't know, probably the right thing to do either. But that would not have been. My top 10 things, although because I think I know it's never going to happen. Although the thing that brought it to a little bit more of my attention, where I brought up this morning, Kevin, somewhere I don't know where in the hell I was paging through last night, just going through general stuff, you know, that happens. They interviewed some guy who somehow or another was in the same cell as Epstein. I don't know if he was before or after, and the guy categorically said, "No way in hell you can kill yourself in that cell. There's nothing there." He goes, "There's no way the guy killed himself." So that's what kind of brought it to my attention this morning. He goes, "It's not like they leave a rope in there just in case or something like that." He goes, "You know, and what, there was a 1 minute or 2 minute bleep out in the camera or something?" Who's kidding who? That guy didn't kill himself.
Yeah. I don't believe it, but again, you know, I'm not on proof. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's the. Anyway, so it's. I just these things happen. And the same thing with the Kennedy thing. I have this amazing feeling that I can't prove, nor do I really want it to be right. Actually, that some name, either the CIA is being, or it's going to be, pick one of the three names or all the three names. It's going to be Johnson, Bush, or Dulles. Dulles is the head of the CIA, and I've been reading more about this. I mean, we were young, Kevin. I didn't realize how much of a hangover there was for people in the CIA, Bush Sr., to be exact, for the Bay of Pigs being such a fiasco. And, it's very similar. Did you ever read...
Actually, Kennedy did, you know, he did, he backed off, you know, when they needed more air support. But he did execute the plan, and that was a plan that came out of the Eisenhower administration, was handed off to him, where, you know, the wisdom of it, because they, you know, he had his, you know, his brilliant people, his Dean Rusks and his McGeorge Bundys and all those people as part of his security group, and they were all kind of gung-ho. And, you know, I think a lot of that, I teach it in some classes sometimes as a groupthink exercise, where nobody wanted to be the one to say, no, this is wrong, nobody, or this is stupid, or, you know, anything. They had been accused of being soft on communism as an administration, and there was, you know, no real pushback.
Kevin, wasn't it really early in his term, though, like the first couple months?
Very early in his term. So, Nixon had been accusing him of that throughout the campaign. So, you know, there were a lot of factors in there where any sane person would have said, at least said, let's hold off on this for a while until we really get our arms around it. We were just handed this plan to do, and you know, sanity might have been to not do it at all, or it might have been to say, you know, let's hold off 3-4 months. Let's make it our plan, not somebody else's plan.
They already had the guys in the camps and stuff in Florida when he took the oath, right?
Yeah, yeah. So they were ready to go, and it's, you know, if you get handed a stupid plan and say let's go, it's not rational. So I think it was basically a lot of rookie mistakes on Kennedy's part, and we should talk about Ryan Poles, speaking of rookie mistakes. But
yeah,
Kennedy was held in contempt for that, because they were at a point in the invasion where they if they had doubled down, they might have been successful. But he wasn't willing to commit any more to it on the fly.
Kevin, if somebody really wanted to, and again, this is, you know, it's a country we both love. If anybody really wanted to make a case study of how bleeped up we can be in this country, and have been in a lot of cases, not that every other country, you know, this is stuff happens. The history of our relationship in Cuba, if you taught that in a college class, people would revoke their citizenship, for God's sake. How bad did we screw that up for 50 years? I mean,
but again, you have to put it in context. Anything communist was considered.
No, I'm talking way before that.
Going back to Batista's time.
I'm talking about Batista could have been the most crooked man. Well, it's hard to say, because how many crooked people are in this world? And our gambling industry was so entrenched, and we had, U.S. Pineapple or U.S. Sugar or somebody in bleep, had these big plantations down there and kind of ran the place. And for lack of a better term, it was pre-Civil War in terms of labor all over again, wasn't it? If it wasn't slave labor, it was damn close. And we were fine with that. And all of a sudden, this guy, big, good-looking guy, decides to do something different, named Castro. And I think he would very happy have been one of our guys instead of one of Russia's guys. All the guy wanted to do was play baseball. I'm not saying he's a saint or anything, but all of a sudden he comes up, and everybody goes, well, this guy's got no chance. Well, guess what? He had a chance, and we ended up backing the most disgusting people that ever lived, between the gamblers and the pineapple companies and stuff. We ended up absolutely on the wrong side of that. And for God's sake, we're still paying for it today. I mean, he was a revolutionary to throw the thugs out, and we backed the thugs, right?
Bad pick. Now, you know, you're right. You can't say Castro's a good guy. Look at how many people were purged, you know. Yeah. So, there may not have been a good side on that, but we sure as hell didn't finesse it very well.
No, and then all of a sudden we have this, but, you know, it's kind of similar. If anybody's, they just came out with a second movie, right? It was The Day of the Jackal. I didn't see their second one, but the first one was really good. And I read the book. Was it Forsyth that wrote the book? Not sure, but it had to do with an assassination attempt against de Gaulle. And you might say, okay, de Gaulle had his warts going back to whatever. But the group that was at him, very similar to the people who think they got jabbed in Cuba. You know, Kevin, I think there's still a law in the books. As Trump keeps pulling laws off the books, nobody knows they know they were there. I think there's a law in the books that says if we ever make nice with Cuba again, totally, all the people there who think they had their property taken, all get it back. So if your great-grandpa had a house in Havana somewhere, and all of a sudden we become allies with Cuba, I don't know what our relationship is now. We're sort of detente, I would say. You get your house back? I can't see that happening. Do you?
Realistically, no. Well, it depends. Is it government-owned now, or is it...
I don't know. The plantations are going to go back to the remnants of U.S. pineapple, wherever the hell they were. Anyway, the thing with de Gaulle was the French had something, I won't say similar, but something similar to a CIA. It was the French Foreign Legion, right? And DeGaulle decided these guys are a bunch of crooks. All they're doing is taking stuff from people wherever they are. He disbanded the French Foreign Legion. And the people who were involved in that, making money off it, basically all got fired. Or, you know, I'm sure they got pensions or something. I'm not sure, but I suspect they did. Because I think they were somewhat, they were employees. They were sort of like CIA people, I think. And these people were absolutely livid. And they tried to kill DeGaulle like a bunch of times. That was before they hired this lone assassin, thinking that he could pull it off. I mean, they were relentless, you know, because he shut down the French Foreign Legion. Now, is it because they weren't helping people out in other countries, or they weren't stealing in other countries? I'm thinking it might be B there to you. But this stuff goes on all over the place. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm saying it's... I don't have an opinion on how far this should go with the Epstein stuff, because you and I don't have the stuff in front of me. We don't have the names and stuff. I'm just saying, whoever side you're on, whether you're the MAGA group that wants it to happen and other people that don't care, just take a second to reflect on how complicated the issue is. So it's my whole theme this morning here, Kevin. I'm not being dogmatic, because I don't know. Just saying.
Well, we've been betting, a little better than a half an hour?
But it's a big deal, because it's going to happen every place.
That's your point. Think about what the implications of releasing it are, and that has to be factored in. I do think there needs to be some public satisfaction out of this. I don't know how I would engineer it, because you brought up some good points. But I think there's a lot of people, and that would be a lot of people on the left too, that think that if our government is complicit in this, that we need to own up to it, and we need to make sure that we have some safeguards so that it is less likely to happen in the future.
But when have we, Kevin? And I think if there is such a thing as a theme to the show, it's the exact same subject that Carl's talking about with the COVID. Where did it come from? Who financed it? Are we ever going to know? All we know is something about North Carolina and money going to Wuhan. Now, those people are right there. Now, do we care about finding them or figure out where the money came from?
Yeah, I do think there are a lot of people who do cross it. Obviously not enough. And, of course, that makes it a little harder, because the auto pen went and, amnesty, what do they give them, pardons for any crimes from 2014 going forward. So that took a lot of the perpetrators of that off the hook, and there's, you know, you get to the point of, you know, what is the point of digging into it? But there actually are people digging into it. There's a few who got their teeth sunk into it, and they won't let go.
Well, they didn't pardon the University of North Carolina. If the money came through their board, at least can't we kick the people off the board?
Can we shine the light of day on it? How do we do that? Yeah. So I think those are all important considerations. But yeah, we got to start putting a stop to this. This is, Fauci knew damn well what they were doing, and he knew that they were doing end arounds on the funding for it. He knew that. Are we going to call it criminal, or are we just going to call them working the system? Don't know, don't care. Just, you know, I want it out for all to see, and I don't want us to do it that way anymore.
I have a question. You've heard Lou talk about this, and I should remember what I don't. If somebody's been pardoned, and you bring them in front of, I'm going to say Congress, I don't know who else could talk to them, can they not take the Fifth, or else they incriminate themselves again?
Well, it depends on what other exposure there is. So it is possible, and Lou will be a good guy to ask this question. The Biden administration was able to pardon them for federal crimes. I don't think they could give them a blanket pardon for state crimes. I don't think. There may be an assumption there that if he incriminates himself, that he can still incriminate himself for places where he doesn't have a pardon.
Well, some people might have a problem with some guy who's pardoned coming back and incriminating all kinds of other people that weren't pardoned. I have a little problem with that.
Dead man for that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, okay, I've got my get-out-of-jail-free card. This guy, Kevin, he did it. I don't know if you'd be real happy with that.
No, I wouldn't.
Just saying. Hey, what do you?
Well, let me ask a different question.
Go ahead.
This is just a quiz. I'm not picking on you. It's just a general quiz.
Because you won't know. I won't know the answer. But
back,
go ahead.
Back up a few years ago, and we actually canceled the All-Star Game in Atlanta because they had passed a voter ID law, which Joe Biden referred to as Jim Crow 2.0. And the Major League Baseball buckled to the pressure and moved the hastily moved the All-Star Game out of Atlanta, and I don't know where to go, Denver.
I think I'm going to go to Denver. Yeah.
Yeah. So we did that. That law change? Did that law change?
No.
Because we were in Atlanta last night. Did the law change?
No.
Did anything else change?
Who knows? But
anything else on election law in Georgia changed?
I would. That's a little question, but I would say probably not.
The answer is no. So what made it okay last night?
Trump versus Biden.
Well, no. This was scheduled a couple of years ago.
What do you think the...
This was scheduled before Trump won the... We won the
general question. What do you think the memory, the average memory is of the average American? Does anybody remember the All-Star Game? If you didn't bring it up, I wouldn't have forgotten. I forgot about it. But the thing was moved. How many people even remember that if you give a quiz tomorrow?
That would be an interesting question.
I'm going to say 1 out of 100.
I'll
tell you what. It's 1 out of 1,000 that knows why it was moved.
A lot of memories. Let's put it that way. My point being is, what the hell? You
know, yeah.
It either shouldn't have done it in the first place, or you shouldn't be doing it now. If it was so awful then, why isn't it awful now? Maybe because voter turnouts have been larger than ever before. Could be that it was proven to be a load of crap, which it was at the time. And frankly, I do find it to be one of the most condescending loads of crap that ever come out, where people say, well, you know, black people can't get IDs.
I would not have said black people.
Well, that's what they say are being disenfranchised. You're disproportionately disenfranchising black people. That's the argument.
I've only gone through the South a few times, and one time that was more. Here's my issue with all this stuff, Kevin. And you and I don't really have a problem with some kind of a voter ID thing. I have an ID. But before I would pompously do something like that, I would get my sorry ass down to Georgia or Mississippi or Alabama and actually, drive an old pickup truck around and find out who doesn't have them. In other words, I'd want to know all about the situation. I have a feeling that I actually had a dinner with a black gentleman. It had to be like a year ago. It was his 80th birthday, Kevin, of all things. And he was talking about growing up. Now, when I say this, he happens to be black, but I have a feeling that a lot of the white community in some of those areas, certainly in West Virginia, isn't in much better shape at all. Do you? He was talking.
It's not about a shape issue, though. You have to have an ID.
Okay, what I'm saying is,
you're not in good shape, and you expect to, and you're going to collect any government benefits because you're poor. You have to have an ID.
All I'm saying is, I would want to educate myself in who doesn't have them. Now, if you're going to say the town of O'Neill, Alabama, for some reason there's 1,000 people that don't have real IDs, not real IDs, those are even worse. If you tell me you're going to pass this law, and for the next 4 Saturdays, you're going to drive in with a big old bus, and you're going to say, bring me a birth certificate, bring me a baptismal certificate, I don't know what you do if you're Baptist, but, and guess what? We're gonna have a way to have people who've never had an ID to get one. And if nobody shows up and doesn't give a crap, well, then okay, then it's on them. But is there some kind of a program to identify areas that, for whatever reason, don't have an ID, of maybe we can get somebody one? And then if they don't want to, well, then it's on them. But is there any sort of a push?
Yeah, virtually every state has a free government ID that you can have just for the asking.
In Illinois, the ID costs more than a driver's license.
I bet you Illinois has a free one too.
It's
not a driver's license, but it's there,
One day, I went in to get my driver's license, and then they had this Illinois ID, and I said, okay. In the unlikely event, I get on a plane somewhere or something, I don't really want to pull my driver's license out. What if I'm a dopo and lose it? This other one, I don't care if I lose. So I get the other one. I think the driver's license was $80, and that thing was 125 or something.
Don't sound right to me.
No, it didn't sound right to me either. But I ponied up to 100, whatever it was. All I'm saying is you have to kind of understand the problem. And I'm not saying they didn't or whatever, but how does somebody not have an ID? I mean, some of these places. Anyway, this guy would say that the only doctor was 30 miles away, and there was only two cars in town, so he had to borrow somebody's car to go to the doctor. He goes, when he broke his arm playing football, they took him there, they got a cast on, and nobody drive him there to get the cast off. After 6 weeks, he cut it off himself. I mean, it's a whole different world in some of these areas, and I don't understand it enough to say whether there's no problem, can we fix it, or the people who don't have an ID don't want one. Well, then I can't fix that. And, I got no problem with saying, well, I'm sorry about you. I guess I don't understand the depth. I've heard that, we had an issue here years ago with every firm's had one where somebody managed to grab some money out of somebody's account a long, long time ago. And it went to an account of a lady in Mississippi. And me, like the terrier I am, is chasing this dough. I got all her bank records and everything, Kevin. It's unbelievable. I mean, the water bill's $12. You know, the credit card to the whatever the food store is $25 a month, and the mortgage is $20. I mean, I'm looking at pictures of this town. I'm going, this is America? For God's sake! I mean, I don't think a lot of people understand what's going on in a lot of these places. I don't. I'm not. It isn't to say that. Why would you not want an ID? Why would you? I mean, I don't want a credit card, but I can't rent a car. I can't do anything without one, right?
Well, yeah, and that's the point, is nobody can navigate life without an ID.
Yeah, are other places so damn isolated that they don't care? I don't know. It's not like nobody knows who they are when they show up at the precinct.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wanted to raise that just to point out.
I'm with you.
I don't even want to get into voter ID and the pros and cons. Well, I can make a whole show out of that.
Well, you've got my brain turning here about how many people remember it and how many people know the reason why.
The foolishness of that decision at the time, and the times seem to have changed a little bit. Let's hit up Ryan Poles for a few minutes.
Yeah, hey, so, what did you want to bring up on this? Other than, in general, the Bears suck.
I have a little bit different slant on it, because there's two things that I want to point out. One, and this is really the lesser of the two points, but I probably should lead with the strongest one. But most people are looking at their new head coach Johnson, and they're saying, Ben Johnson's going to need a little grace because he's a first-time head coach. He was a great offensive coordinator, and he's highly respected as a play caller, good at developing quarterbacks, etc. But he's still a first-time head coach, and he's going to need a little grace because there's going to be some growing pains there. Now, we have 3 years of Ryan Poles, and I don't think very many people look back at his tenure and say, geez, he deserves a little grace as a first-time head coach. Our first-time general manager, because he was bound to make a few mistakes along the way too. So I don't think he's getting that same grace in retrospect that people are willing to give to the coach now. And I just think that's that's just institutional or mass memory failing or just not lacking the perspective. I would especially say that he deserves a little grace for that, because as a first-time general manager, you would like to be joining an institution where you could get some reasonable guidance and some reasonable input from inside your organization, so that you know, you did have some safeguards against some of the mistakes that rookie people
it's in the third off
first timers get. Well, he had George McCaskey and Matt Eberflus. So I don't believe he got a damn bit of help from those guys. Whereas, you know, now he has what I think are at least, you know, better respected, better, more intelligent people. But that's not even the point, because the discussion that I hear, you know, listening to some radio stations and stuff, as I do periodically, is look at his record. Does he deserve an extension, a contract extension that matches the tenure of Ben Johnson as head coach? Well, you know, I get hanging up, but this discussion never centers around Kevin Warren, the president of the Bears. And I think that's really where the decision needs to be scrutinized. And what clearly the conclusion that Kevin Warren has drawn is that he has a team of people he's been able to observe working together for several months now, and he feels pretty good about the ability of himself, Ryan Poles, and Ben Johnson to work together as a leadership team for the Bears. And when you think of it in that perspective, that he believes he has the right people in the right jobs to succeed moving forward, then your only question is Kevin Warren right? You know, are these the right kind of people? Because he, you know, he clearly feels that he has the talent, the motivation, and the well-aligned goals among those three to successfully move forward. And you saw that it was a little bit different this year in the draft, that all of a sudden his coach did have a hell of a lot more input into the draft and how they were, you know, what they were going to do. And whether that means that the GM Ryan Poles was neutered, I don't see it that way. I see it more along the lines of, you know, they were able to get themselves on the same page, because there is no indicator that there was any strife behind that. So, I'm not saying Kevin Warren is right, wrong, or indifferent, but I'm saying that if we are scrutinizing just whether Ryan Poles deserves that extension, I think that's the wrong way to look at it. I don't think that's evaluating the situation well at all.
Well, 2 points, as usual, for me out of left field. Way back in the day, Kevin, I went skiing up in Jackson, Wyoming, and there must have been a guy who was from Chicago that was up there that was writing for the paper, and there's not a whole lot going on in Jackson, Wyoming, right? So the Jackson, Wyoming Ink Blot, or whatever the name of the paper was, they gave the guy a whole back page. Now, the paper wasn't as big as the Tribune, but the back page was still a lot. And he wrote about Chicago sports. And he was talking about no place else on earth, and this was when the Hawks were changing coaches all the time, the Bears, the Cubs, the Sox. And he was talking about, like, in the last 5 years, there had been, like, something 20-some coaching changes. And he said, but the management all remained the same. And he made the idea that this guy is the same as, who's the guy they got from Kansas City? He worked with, what's his name, the quarterback, off a great offensive coordinator, we want him. Now, this is the second time we've done that. I say we.
No, except that was criticized at the time because the head coach was the offensive coordinator, and Matt Nagy.
This guy's point was
Nagy wasn't even calling plays.
What this guy's point was, that's what you do when you fire the coach or the manager. The fandom, which might be fully up your ass about the team, all of a sudden backs off and gives the new guy a year or two before they go back up your ass.
Yeah, you give him a little bit of grace.
And then you fire the next guy. I mean, if I had a tape recorder, if I was Howard Cosell, my guys that I have a cocktail with down here, some of them are fanatic Bear fans, if I would have taped them, because I've known these guys a long time, when Nagy got hired, when Eberflus got hired, when this guy got hired, it's the exact same conversation. We finally got our guy. We're going forward from here. He's the right guy. The other guy was an ass. Yeah, but
I disagree with you that was the most common point of view on both of those hires.
I'm saying these guys are, you're not as fanatic as they are. They love Eberflus. They love Nagy. Oh, God, our next guy is going to be what's his name, the quarterback?
I remember a whole lot of people saying that, you know, Nagy's not qualified. He wasn't even the play caller. He had spent one year.
The press here was he developed.
Genius head coach.
Why is the quarterback's name escaping me at Kansas City?
Trubisky. Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, the press here was, this is the guy that gave Kansas City Patrick Mahomes. He developed him. That was the press here.
Not the way I remember it.
Okay, what I'm saying is that's one of the reasons why you fired a coach. It's not like the next guy knows the X and O's any better. Well, sometimes they do when some guys are better, obviously. But same thing with a baseball manager. Fired a manager. How many times have the Hawks fired the coach? Does anybody think that you could put Jesus Christ as the Hawk coach right now and he wouldn't win? They got nobody, as far as I can see. Oh, by the way, you know what's interesting, Kevin?
You hire the leader in part because he has the football acumen that you want. Whether it's football, basketball, it doesn't matter. You know, you can pick the sport. But what you really hire the leader to do is that the team has, you know, a focus, that they have a way that is everybody understands, and everybody understands how we're going to approach it. Everybody understands, you know, how we're going to, you know, what kind of team we want to be, and then they keep them focused on that. And there's no better example of that than Phil Jackson, who, you know, was brilliant at managing the egos, even though he had some egos that really, really tested it and pushed it to the hilt. And that was Rodman, but it was also Pippen, and it, you know, and there were others that were real challenges to him, and he did the same thing in Los Angeles with Shaq and Kobe and guys like that, where he had to manage the egos, and then his assistant coaches handled all the tactical stuff, and that's, you know, I think that's a great example, because if you recall, Phil Jackson won one or two championships in L.A. and then he left. And they handed the keys to somebody else, and a few years later they hired him back, and all the, because they were extremely disappointing after he left.
Well, you want to match the person.
They were winning championships again. Yes, he had the great players. He was gifted with some of the greatest players ever to play NBA basketball, but his job was to keep the egos in track.
Well, you have to match
Pistons bad boys. Chuck Daly's job was to keep the egos under control and to keep them all pushing in the same direction. And you can find lots of examples of that as you go through pro sports, when they manage to keep the players pushing in the same direction, even though a lot of them are going to want to go off the rails, then it's fine. And then when they go off the rails and start going their own directions, then it's not fine anymore.
Well, you want to match if you can. And we've seen two examples of that in Chicago. The worst one had to be the White Sox. Essentially, their niche, really for a long time, since Minnie Minoso, for God's sake, their niche was in getting Hispanic ball players here, right? That other people, mm-hmm. before they was the same draft and everything, was bringing Hispanic ball players here. And they had Ozzie, and then they had Ricky Renteria, and all of a sudden they decided to go with Tony La Russa. Talk about a fish in the wrong pond. He didn't speak Spanish. Not that, you know, in normal.
Actually, he did speak Spanish.
Well, but whatever it was, they lost all. I mean, the Phillies, way back, this is in the early 80s, and people don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but they had a veteran team that just could never quite get over the hump. And they made Dallas Green the manager. Dallas Green was a big, brutish kind of guy that didn't take crap from anybody. And he basically stood up in front of those guys and says, I'm in charge. If you don't like it, there's a door. Now, Dallas Green wanted no part of a young team where he had to teach people every day. He was perfect for that spot, right? And he became general manager of the Cubs. He did a nice job here. But you wouldn't put him on a team with eight rookies. He wanted no part of it. It's just not what he was good at.
Truth be told, there are people who can flex into those different situations. Dallas Green wasn't going to be one of them.
No, and you know, and I, you know, what's real quick, we got a dash here, Kevin. I assume
which
Russell's
means
with
he has a shelf life. Which means a guy like that's going to have a shelf life.
Well, you know, I was looking at the maybe Friday, if you don't mind, both of us doing a little homework. I'm enthralled by this baseball draft. We don't want to spend much time on it, but the compensation picks, I think I had Baltimore getting like five picks out of the first 35 because of people they lost and something. But, you know, it's weird. They stole the White Sox number one pick because they had a early pick the year before, right? But now in the second round, they got the first pick in the second round. The first round's the lottery or something, or if you're really lousy, you can only be in the top five 1 year in a row or something like that. Anyway,
but they have an anti-tanking thing that is supposed to be a disincentive for people sucking continuously.
But whoever had the eighth pick, I forgot the team now, they drafted somebody and the guy immediately declared for Mississippi State. So they're going to lose that guy in the eighth pick. You think you would have asked them beforehand?
You generally, with guys like that, who are, they're probably already committed. Because they've been gone through the whole recruiting process, and generally, yes, you would already have a contract agreement with them.
So those guys are going to lose him, but now do they pick up one of these compensating picks?
Yeah, I don't know
year?
If they get another pick or not, or if they just if everybody just mocks them.
Well, the Sox, they pick. I watched a shortstop play a few times. He looks pretty damn good to me. For their first pick is a shortstop. Now, shortstop sometimes the best player in a team, and you can move them somewhere else. But their first pick's a shortstop again, which is, I think the first five or six or seven picks came and were all pitchers.
Oh, pitchers and shortstops. That was your first round.
Yeah,
and you're right. The shortstops generally can be moved. They're looking for great athletes at that point. If you have a good bat, you can run, you can throw. You can play shortstop, you can play center field, you can play, third base, you can play a lot of positions eventually. And the White Sox happen to have some pretty good young shortstops, some good young infielders in general in their system. But didn't the Cubs draft a shortstop too? Or they drafted an outfielder and then they drafted a shortstop, something like that.
They're an outfielder, first baseman.
They also know that when they're drafting out of high school, they're really thinking about the end of Dansby Swanson's contract.
Probably. Yeah, the first guy I think was an outfielder, first baseman. But yeah, I mean, Friday I'll just go through. We'll go through it for a couple of minutes. There's like three different rounds of compensatory picks between the first and second round. There's compensatory A, compensatory B, and actually some team who picks, maybe was pretty good last year, that picks down in the hunt, actually can have two or three more picks before anybody else picks a second time. So the Sox, which were the horse bleep team, would they pick like seventh or eighth and then first in the second round? And somebody else, I think it was Baltimore, had like five picks before them, before their second round pick, which is kind of weird, isn't it? I mean, anyway, I'll try and go through that a little bit.
I know there's a lot of convoluted rules, and it's all baked into the collective bargaining agreement, because the players want they want to be able to move, they want freedom of movement, and the owners always want compensation for that freedom of movement, and that's where these types of picks come into the negotiation.
Less stupid question, the person who wrote the article, I had never even dreamed of this, but all these pitchers that are being drafted high are pretty much all lefties. And the guy was saying that the history of the last 10 years of right-handed pitchers being picked high, the history is terrible. Now, very few of them have worked out, where the lefties have. I mean, if you have any idea why that could be true other than circumstance?
No, it seems to be the opposite with the Cubs, that Jordan Wicks has not worked out, their first-round lefty from a few years ago, and Cade Horton has looked pretty good so far. So I don't know. Of course, you can say statistically speaking, which doesn't mean that individual cases are not going to be different. I think that comes into play. My question always when you draft a pitcher is, has he had his Tommy John surgery yet, or do we have to plan on that too?
Why don't we take all our guys that can throw 105 miles an hour and make them sit down for 2 hours class twice a week for like a month, with a combination of Greg Maddux and his Shota, how do you pronounce the Japanese guy's name?
Shota Inaga.
Maybe they could teach these guys how to pitch.
Watch, isn't he?
You don't have to throw it through the catcher to get people out.
I just, no, but it's very nice if you can.
Well, yeah. I'd love to be one of those guys, Greg Maddux, and when you really needed one, whizzed one by somebody. Bob Gibson used to do that, right? He goes, I can throw as fast as anybody else, but why do I need to do it more than five times a game?
Yeah, Bob Gibson was, for us geezers, we probably have all seen him pitch. If you never saw Bob Gibson pitch in person, it was a wonder, because he'd be up there throwing really hard. He had a really great fastball. He had an incredible curveball, and he'd be throwing all this really hard. But boy, when the game was on the line in the eighth inning, all of a sudden out would come this fastball that you had not seen the whole game.
Yeah, it's... I'm going to have crazy stuff. Anyway, Kevin, we'll talk on Friday. Is Russell with us?
Russell is with us. Hi, Russell. Bye, Russell.
Hi. Bye.
Russell, how are you in this heat? Are you in Indianapolis heat or are you here heat?
I'm here heat. I get to do one of the most pleasant things that human beings get to do. I'm heading to the emissions station here in Chicago.
Well, there isn't one in Chicago.
Wish me luck. I studied all last night, somewhere in the suburbs. I studied all night. I'm hoping to pass my emissions test this morning.
I had to go twice this last time. I had to get something
that's
done.
That's so fun.
You know, it was weird there's an interesting story. When I bought the Suburban, which would be now 12 years ago, it was a former Secret Service car. Special build. So I took it. They still had the emissions thing here in Chicago, where they still stuck the thing up the butt of the machine instead of just poked into your computer. Mm-hmm. The guy says, you pass, and not only do you pass, you have a lifetime exemption. And I go...
Congratulations.
Yeah, I go, why is that? And he goes, says here you got a lifetime exemption. Just enjoy it. I go, okay. Everybody I told that, how did you get a lifetime exemption? I don't know, but I had one. I never once got a... In 11 years I owned the thing, I never once got a thing, had to go for a test.
And that's fantastic.
To this day, I don't know why.
I can't recall the last time I did this, but I can't recall a lot of things that I've done in the past.
Well, at some point...
Where I grew up, there was one state... You know, if we were in Memphis right now and I said I was doing that, city of a million people when I was growing up, and they had one place.
Well, to talk about how...
It was basically like... You needed to block out an afternoon to go get it done.
Huge long. Plus, they used to actually stick the thing up the tailpipe.
Well, they did.
Yeah.
Yes, they did.
Well, one
time when I was like 17, I went through, failed, and then drove on the expressway for about 5 minutes, then came back and passed.
Oh, yeah. They used to say just run it real hard and bring it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, who was the, was it Rauner, the governor here? The Republican guy that was, he was pissed off at, one of the mayors, it wasn't Daley, was it the Ram father? He was pissed off in Chicago, so he took all the emissions test places out of the city and got all those jobs out of here. There was a big spot by me on Webster, and he closed it down. So for a long time, there was none in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you go to a regular mechanics place. You don't even go to a... Well, they still have a couple centers, but I went in Orlando just to...
Oh, they have a bunch of centers. This whole thing is...
Yeah, but they're not centers. They're just auto repair places that have the tester.
There are centers.
There are, but I mean, I went to the one in Orland, or in Homer Glen, and it was just a regular auto repair facility, and they it's a great deal. They test it. They go, you didn't pass. What's wrong with it? By the way, can you fix it? It's a great
we'll
way
fix
to get
it right over there.
Yeah, yeah. Fix it right here.
It's kind of like going to the doctor and they're hoping to find something to fix.
Yeah, you need a shot of penicillin in your ass, but nobody does that anymore.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Another great weekend. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, I just have a question, and it's, again, I've been talking about this because I'm just, all I'm doing is giving the numbers out, and which doesn't mean buy or sell or whatever, because I don't use the numbers I just use them as a word of caution to people who maybe need to be cautious, and that maybe not everybody does or whatever, but everybody's an individual, and I only give advice if I know you and I know what your situation is. But I've been doing this for a long time. I mean, I watch this Oracle go up every day, and Oracle was one of the stocks that I did an assessment of in 2000, that and Cisco and some of these places, and I looked at them. I said, these guys not only don't have any earnings, They don't have any revenue. And sure enough, somewhere along the line, and by the way, I didn't pick the day or anything, we had this huge crash. Now, the Fed acted differently back then. There was no, you know, the money pouring in wasn't the same. The Fed had cut back on the Y2K stuff, so it was a different world. But I look at this in NVIDIA, and I had a client, and he's got some NVIDIA, and I go, by the way, when was the last time you checked the revenue per share of this thing? What do you mean? Mm-hmm. I said, well, you might want to check that. By the way, it's $6 a share. Oh, you mean earnings? No. I mean revenue.
No, in revenue, yeah.
Because they actually have like a 50% margin. So their earnings is like 3 and their revenue is like 6. But guess what? If your revenue is 6, you can't make more than 6, right? it's all you're taking in the door. And I said, you know, it's but then again, Bitcoin goes up every day and there is no revenue. So I mean, it's hard to even, you know, pin one against another here because, and the only thing I will absolutely say, Russell, is if you take all these stocks, and this is the same conclusion I came to in 2000, I took all 5 or 6 of the ones that were, you know, the crazy ones, well, not the crazy ones, but it was Cisco, it was Oracle, Intel, Microsoft, and what the hell was the other one? Dell, where were the 5 that were 50% of the QQQ, like some of them are now. And I looked at all the, if they were going to grow into their numbers, which, by the way, companies can do. I mean, you know, NVIDIA can possibly double this year in revenue and double again next year. My point has been, and I've mentioned this a few times, but I think it's worth repeating, they can't all. Because if they all quadruple their revenue in the next 5 years, what's the GDP going to have to be, for God's sake? Unless we pour so much money into the system that you know, we could get there that way, I suppose, and become the Weimar Republic. But by and large, if Microsoft triples, I don't know that NVIDIA and Oracle and Meta and Google can all triple with it. Is there going to be anybody else left?
You know, within, what do you mean by anybody?
Well, I mean, if you look at the revenue those firms have, and if you say, okay, these numbers lead me to believe that these guys are super high growth, and in 3 to 5 years, they're going to be 3 times the size in terms of revenue, because then they'll grow into these numbers. Well, if you add up the revenue,
those aren't the estimates.
Yeah, all of a sudden you sit there.
I'm looking at NVIDIA's financials right now while we're talking. That's where
I'm saying.
Yeah, they expect. They got revenues. They got revenues going up about 2.5 times between now and 2030.
Okay, so that puts them at $15 a share.
$15 a share in 2030.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm just trying to look at the market cap versus all that and see how that's gone along. I mean, they've gone, their revenues have gone up. I haven't really looked at the fundamentals on the company, but goodness gracious, the fundamentals have gone up sixfold since 2022.
Without a doubt.
They're up 14 times where they were in 2020. So I guess it is a possibility.
But are they going to take Microsoft, Apple, Google all with them?
No, because they do completely different things.
Well, they're all priced kind of the same way where Microsoft is. I never thought I'd see Microsoft.
But no, I mean, you know, what NVIDIA does is very much on the professional end. What Microsoft and those other companies do is more of closer to the consumer end of things.
Well, the stock was up $8 yesterday or the day before. Well, it was up $8 yesterday and finished up like 6-something. I would say that if you even look at NVIDIA investors, and again, I'm not beating up on a company. They've done great. Mm-hmm. How many people, if you walked around all your professor buddies and said, by the way, how many shares outstanding does NVIDIA have? The when it was up $8 yesterday, that's $200 billion in market cap.
Uh-huh.
In 2000, there was only like 4 companies that were worth more than $200 billion. I mean, does anybody even? I mean, I guess you know we're at the schlump end of the curve. You might not be, but everybody I know is. When I say the schlump end of the curve, I don't even know what $1 trillion is like. I mean, I couldn't sell my stock and go buy a baseball team for $10 billion. I mean, the people who have the money at this level, it's got to be like give me a, you gotta have something higher than a $100 cigar, $100 bill. Lighting my cigar with that is chump change now. Right? It's amazing how many people I think feel that way. And the rest of the world is sitting there, cutting coupons in the Myers aisle. I mean, it's really something. Uh-huh. I mean, how do you guys even? I mean, you're into this, work with bigger firms obviously than I have. But how do you even come to grips? Almost we got to change our lead in. If I had $1 million, you got to change $1 million.
Oh yeah,
chump
that
change.
Number doesn't mean much of anything anymore, does it?
No, we have $1 billion.
Yeah, I mean, you throw a lot of things. I'm still trying to. I'm just looking at how much the financials have grown on. I had no idea how much the fundamentals had grown on NVIDIA, because I spend more time paying attention to the derivative end of things than the fundamentals on companies. But you do reach a point where you're so freaking big that how do you continue to move the needle? And I think that's what's happened to Apple. But you know, they're going to double sales if the estimates are correct. I'm only looking at the revenues, not the earning part, but the revenues for NVIDIA are expected to double over the next 3 years.
Well, I guess,
and typically you think of, these very, very large companies as being lucky to, increase revenue at 10 or 20% a year.
Oh, I'm with you. But on the one hand, you say, this is the fallacy of numbers. God, these guys are going to double. Which, by the way, they doubled like from last year. I mean, but now if what I would, I always have this discussion with Carl.
They tripled.
Well, yeah. I think that the economy.
No, and the thing is, they've got this really great. I don't understand the tech end like I used to when I would really focus in on following these stocks. But I mean, they've got proprietary technology on the chip end of things that if you want to do anything and compete in any way, shape, or form that involves doing very high-powered computing, which is just about everything these days, you're stuck with NVIDIA. Now you really are. You are. They make these chips that are like what they basically did, and it's kind of funny is and I feel like the auto, this happened to the U.S. auto industry as well, but Intel was basically kind of capping their technology and growing their technology where it would continue to grow demand and you'd want a new PC every couple of years. And NVIDIA was like, they're artificially doing this and just, took off technology wise and kind of left Intel in the dust. That's it.
Well, by the way,
in the 80s, cars almost became disposable.
And then
Japan was like, well, we can make something much better and charge the same price for it.
Well, I'm trying hard here to agree with you. What I'm trying to say is my joust with Carl is he's convinced that these numbers have to come crashing down because there's no way we can catch him. I think there's a chance, but
I think what happens is you plateau.
Well, that's what I'm trying. That's what I'm trying to get to.
And the plateau lasts for some time.
Well, that's what.
It's one of two things that happens. If the consensus is the valuation has gotten way ahead of itself, a lot of people show up, sell the stock, and the valuation comes back in line, and a different group of people come in and buy the stock, or people buy it back because they've got an opportunity to own it again at a much lower price. Those are the two scenarios if the stock has gotten way ahead of itself.
Well, for my scenario to work, which Carl thinks I'm nuts even to suggest it, what would have to happen with a stock like NVIDIA is we'll take the Russell approach and say next year they're going to be $12 a share, or maybe more, and the next year they're going to be, 18 or 20, in the stock, if the stock hangs here, like you just sort of, said might happen, all of a sudden now you're doing what I would like to have happen, grow into the stock price without some kind of a crash. Now,
right.
Now if we go from $6 to $12 revenue, and next year the stock's $250. You haven't really gained, have you, in terms of And that seemingly is what's happening. Every little piece of good news, the stock runs up faster than revenue ever could. And it's up, you know, it was under 100 this year, wasn't it, at one point?
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah, no, it was under. I'm looking at the chart right now.
Just barely. I think it just nipped under. It only nipped under one day or something.
It did. You want to guess the day?
it's a pretty
easy one.
Like your birthday or something?
No, tariffs, dude.
Oh, well, yeah, one of the tariff things. Well, you know, now we've got big debates on that, but hey.
Yeah, it's right around. No, it's not a debate. I'm looking at the chart. It's early April is when it dipped under 100. That's not a.
Speaking of tariffs, what did you make of the CPI report yesterday?
I assume that the inflation is just bottled up and it'll be next month that we see a big number.
Well, 0.3 is bigger than we've had.
0.3, but that was expected.
Okay, I mean, if...
You know, I'm expecting an upside surprise at some point.
Will we ever get one out of this government?
I don't know how much influence he has over the... I don't know if he's threatening everybody's job where they calculate the CPI if the number doesn't come into what he likes or not, but, eventually it has to show up.
By the way, I love having your...
It just has to.
You know, having your friends on.
You do what?
I loved having your friend on last week. She was terrific.
Oh, you like Dr. A?
Yeah.
Dr. Ademiak? Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to... I'll get her down there in the studio in person at some point.
Well, that'd be cool. Let me know so I can clean the place up, you know. Clean up.
Yeah.
Make sure.
I'll give her a head... you know what? Actually, my office at school... looks a lot like your office, so and she's willing to come into my office at school, so I don't think she'd be terribly upset by your spot. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
I just it's funny. I was I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but I have a pretty good friend that I meet once in a while for an adult beverage, and he's on Social Security and he's retired, but he's paying all the insurance bills and so forth. You know, and he has some extra income. He's, you know, he's retired. He's got some dough. He said if he was just on Social Security, his insurance and his one or two prescriptions out of pocket and what he has to pay for his concierge doctor is something like 38% of his Social Security check.
I can see that.
And
I can totally see that.
Yeah, and I just...
Going through some of the things we've been
doing. I wonder, you know, we talk about, you know, the government and what people put up with, and we were talking earlier, not so much about the Epstein thing, but just what are the motivations to decide who you're going to prosecute, decide who you're going to embarrass, decide which firm you're going to bring down, and the politics and stuff involved in that. And it's never an easy call. It wasn't on the board of the SIBO. I mean, you didn't want to embarrass people. Mm-hmm. You didn't want to do that. You sort of wanted them to stop, but then if you didn't embarrass somebody once in a while, then nobody else would pay attention to you. Yet I hated the idea of ever making an example out of one person, because why one person and not the rest of the people? But it's just a real big can of worms, and you wonder how people in this country, my disappointment really in the last several years, for really the last 15, 20 years, who's ever been president, I can't believe that the people in this country listen and believe the crap they hear without checking out themselves and realize I'm being lied to. I mean, the idea that somebody can get their letter from Social Security saying, because of the inflation last year, your Social Security check is going up 2.3%. Oh, by the way, the medical piece you got to pay us back just went up 5.4 or whatever it is. How does anybody sit there and go, wait a minute, my inflation's 2.3, but yours is 5.4. I mean, how do you send that letter out to people and not have a bunch of old people with pitchforks banging on the White House the next day? And yet we seem to put up with this like there's nothing. I don't get it. I'm not saying I want to go, you know, do violence for a Social Security letter, but how does somebody not pick that up in the editorial, the Tribune, or everybody reads there in any place anyone, and say, look at this letter we just sent out to people. How absurd is this? We don't. I mean, it's a small thing, but it's not a small thing.
No, it's just indicative of kind of like everything.
And why all of a sudden do we put up with it? I mean, we don't have any newspapers. You know, I guess you want to call the podcast, but they're just a slur of people talking. There's no kind of authority there. Well, obviously, if you're on the left, you listen to these people when they're crazy. And like,
that's it. You basically. I was kind of letting you talk about this until, and that you're going down the line that I was going to go down right there. Was that, you know, it just depends on who's in charge and what. You know what news source you listen to and what they tell you.
Why do we have
you know, and that, you know, I think that's what it really comes down to. The people that are upset about one thing, it's because they listen to one side of things. People are you know what you're upset about, it basically is what echo chamber are you involved in.
Well, I go on YouTube to get sports stuff generally, but every once in a while,
mm-hmm.
I'll see, you know, some outrageous thing from the left where, oh, Trump embarrassed himself again, and I listened to this guy talk for 4 minutes, and I don't know what he's talking about. It didn't match the headline at all. You know,
You
do the same thing with the people kind of on the right, but we have, well, I won't throw a name, but one of the guys on the show, one mm-hmm. of the more brilliant guys on the show, and I think everybody's pretty brilliant, was hitting me up with this, you know, Powell should get tossed because of the 62% overrun and whatever, the remodeling of the place, that now he's incompetent and there's cause to fire him. This is what this guy who's the head of economic advisor, what's his name, Bessett or something, Hassett.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that guy, whatever, I don't know where they got him, but he, I mean, so I'm arguing with this guy, saying, you know, wait a minute. First of all, why would you ever believe that this thing is 62% over budget? And if it was, what makes you think that it wasn't a 10, 15, 20 year design thing from 15 different
people. It's just been over budget for the last three, you know, for our lifetimes.
But I'm saying,
and now all of a sudden somebody's using it to.
Well, I said, do you think that, yeah, Powell was ever presented with a stack of drawings, or do you think he had any idea of who the hell they were hiring, who the contractors were, and what the timetable was? I don't think that guy's ever looked at a drawing in his life. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you honestly think? Well, what do you mean? He's in charge. I mean, but because you're a Trumper and Trump said it, you're going to believe it. And I'm like,
exactly.
And I don't see. All I know is I don't believe anything any of these guys say. I try and check it out, and every single time it seems like I come up with a different answer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it bothers the hell out of me, but also gives me something to do, I guess, huh?
Yeah, but no, it really, that's when you're like, why aren't they completely up in arms about this one? You know, I'll ask my little journalism student over in D.C. when I get a chance, does anybody ever, you know, do you ever hear anybody talking about this, and just see what she says. She likes to focus more on environmental stuff, on the stuff that she's, or government environment, which she's, yeah, you know, interested in certain things.
What do you make of this? Mm-hmm. We've talked this week, and I, a lot of stuff that's been interesting. I always love your opinion, because even you have opinions on stuff that are not just focused on economics.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Bill Moriarty on the other day. I don't know if you managed to listen about the thing in Texas. But God's sake, that, you know, the people that all died in that, and you listen to stuff that went on over the last 8 or 10 years. I can't believe that that's true, that this person did this wrong and this person did that wrong. And do we have people that have no common sense anymore? Did you see I mentioned this yesterday, you see the picture of the guy on the bridge? They got a guy, did they hand out stupid pills in that town? There's a guy, he just happened to be there, Russ. There's always a guy taking films down, right? So he's showing the river, and it's moving along like the river always does. All of a sudden, you see this little bit of a bulge, and it looks like the flow, like, doubled.
It's getting higher.
And all of a sudden, it happens again. Well, now, the bridge, which started out, I'm going to say, 20 feet above the river, is now getting higher, higher, higher. All of a sudden, it's coming over the bridge in the middle.
Yeah, and, you know, and the water doesn't know that it's not supposed to be going over the bridge.
Well, all of a sudden, all these people...
It's not like you're there and it's going to stop. At the top of the bridge.
But there's people gunning across the bridge in their cars and trucks trying to make it before it gets any higher.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking, if you get swept off a bridge into a raising river, we're never seeing you. I'm saying, how could anybody be that dumb?
Because people don't think of risk reward.
Well, yeah.
They really don't. You know, they've got a little bit of tunnel vision going on there, but and you do have to assume when we have natural disasters that some of the people that unfortunately either get injured or lose their lives do so because of actions that are not that could have been prevented. Boy, am I being polite.
Oh yeah.
You know, as opposed to, hey honey, hold on tight, we're going for it.
Well, use the tenant's term, an unforced error.
Yeah. I got that would be a great statistical study. How many, what percentage of deaths are unforced errors during natural disasters?
I showed real quick, we got to go to break, but I saw somebody was showing this lady had her 80th birthday, mm-hmm. and they took her skydiving. And she loved,
that's avoidable.
And she loved it. Yeah. I remember Maddie Weber one day, Maddie Weber, our old producer and still great guy, well, he's always going to be a great guy, who said, Chief, one day he's on the air and he goes, Chief, what did he say? There was three things I'm not going to die from. Jumping out of an airplane, unless I have to. Getting bit by a shark, unless I land off a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean. And I forget what the third one was. He goes, I'm not going to die that way. those are unforced errors or something along those lines. Anyway, S&P Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 2. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Andrew on the board. NASDAQ Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 15 as the PPI came out unchanged. So that's not hot compared to CPI yesterday. I'm not sure how that is unchanged, but it was. And probably report more on that on Friday with Carl. But the individual stocks we got moving here. Boeing's up $1.50. NVIDIA's up 76 cents. Nothing crazy. Goldman Sachs up 6. They had earnings, so their earnings must have been halfway decent. Johnson & Johnson, they had earnings as well. They're up 370. Trading now, it's 2%, but not crazy. Over in Europe, we've got we've got a slow machine is what we've got. Danish official says 30% tariffs on EU, completely unacceptable. There you go. DAX up 106.4%, FTSE up 28.3%. CAC around up 1, call that flat. So a little bit up in Europe, not a lot, just but definitely bullish. over in Asia. We've got again a slow. Why don't you do some traffic, weather, and sports, and then we'll get back to these numbers.
All right, gotcha. It is 7:37 here in Chicago on Wednesday, July 16th. Just a little bit of sports here. Last night was the MLB All-Star Game. We had the Nationals just sneak out a win against the Americans, ending the tiebreaker with a home run at 4-2-3. Over to weather in Phoenix. It's going to be another hot one today. It's going to be 82 degrees, going to have a high of 99. They're going to have clouds and a bit of sun, possibly a thunderstorm this afternoon.
99 is cool for those guys.
Yeah, I realized right after I said that, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a hot one. It's always a hot one there. But they also might have some cloudy skies due to wildfire smoke. Over here in Chicago, it's going to be around, let's see, currently at about 76 degrees. We're looking almost around the same thing. We're going to have a high of about 95. It should at least be a little bit better in terms of sky. It should be a little bit of mix of sun and clouds. Finally, for Chicago traffic, there are no major accidents to report. Looks like the inbound Kennedy is running the slowest right now. Both the inbound and the outbound are running about 35 minutes. But other than that, traffic is about business as usual.
Nikkei down 14, call that flat. Hang Seng down 72.3%. So not much going on there. The big news yesterday, and this will be topic here for Mr. Russell, is the 10-year went over 4.5 yesterday, and the 30-year went over 5. It's now back a little bit, so it's 4.99. But I think those are interesting. Every time it gets there, it kind of comes back down. If it stays over, I think that's news. But I'll put that to the professor when we're done with this. Oil down 67 cents, 65.85, nothing going on there. Gold up $4, 33.41. Silver up 4 cents, 38.15. Foreign exchange, the euro is 116. It was at 117, so the dollar has strengthened over the last week or so. Same thing with the pound, 134, it was 135. We've got Bitcoin up 2,400, 119.037. That's going to be another question for the professor. Hey, Russell, if I could take Russell off your forehead and put Milton Friedman on it, since I can't go to his grave, I don't know where it is, and ask him a question. If you were to explain to him what exactly, and we're talking about somebody who wrote the Monetary History of the United States, not Russell, but Milton Friedman, every kind of input into the system, output, be it gold, be it currency, whatever these guys essentially choreographed from, it was in 1860 to 1959 or something, amazing work when back before you had internet to find all this stuff. If you describe to him the Bitcoin phenomenon, but include all of them, and that the market value of all of them now is approaching $4 trillion, how does that affect, or does it, M2, or do we need something else called like a wealth bubble or a wealth index in addition to just money index? I mean, when we talked a little bit earlier about some people seem to have, $20 billion and other people got 48 cents. How much is this affecting anything? I mean, when the stock market goes up...
I think it's spread around the world so much that it's not. In fact, one of the things I'm coming up with, I've got a couple of students that want to do projects in the fall for credits, a couple of graduate students, and one of them is interested in central bank stuff. So I said, what do you think about... I thought about, because you're so interested in this, doing a global M2, not just U.S. but global.
Well, they're all
going because I'll tell you what, China. I looked into China's, and boy, it's leaving us in the dust as far as how much money they're printing over there compared to here. And you got to assume they print money in a different way. Some of their large banks have the ability to issue currency, but I mean their monetary growth, I think it's averaging about 8% a year over the last couple of years or something. The number was extremely high, but beyond just the U.S., what is the amount of global currency look like? Because that could be more of a driver of global inflation anyway. So I'd say if you want to use that number, because I don't know what percent is held outside the U.S., but Bitcoin is used a lot more for transactions outside the U.S. than it's used for transactions inside the U.S. And it's, you know, if you live in somewhere like Venezuela or Argentina, you're much more reliant upon it than you are in the U.S. So I don't know if the $4 trillion, what kind of impact that has on our country, you know, alone, but it should be incorporated somehow into the amount of money that's available. But it should be global, not just, you know, not relative to how much, you know, what the M2 is in the U.S.
Well, funny you should mention that, because as you know, I keep track of a little bit of this. I mean, I don't do it every day, but somewhere along the line, and I'll kick it up here. I'll give you the actual month, which is even more bizarre. Who's we? Kemosabe, you got a mouse in your pocket?
The royal we.
And this is, it definitely, it dovetails into, you know, Trump's criticism of Powell and you know, lowering interest rates and all this kind of stuff. But we, after the COVID fiasco, when we poured so much money into the system, there was an attempt to draw down M2 a little bit, to somehow deal with this 40% bulge in 18 months, which we've never seen in this country ever, not even in wartime. And it sent prices up. I think it sent prices up for, at the end of the day, 40%. The weird part, though, I think, Russell, is I think that it was the they poured so much money in that we couldn't even absorb it for a while. And I'm going to say that if you were to have a class on monetary theory, if you asked the question, Southside asked, if you asked the question, how long does it take money, a movement from the Fed, either to loosen or tighten the monetary gates, the answer always was 4 to 6 months. It takes to work its way through the system.
But
it
was, yeah.
But I think when you pour that much in there, I don't think you can absorb 40%. So I think the number actually was a lot longer. So we were actually still feeling this, you know, several years later. Because originally people were just kicking it back to the Fed at night. Anyway, what I'm saying is, we peaked out here in April of 2022, which shouldn't be a shock to anybody. The Fed started to come down and actually bottomed out at April of 23, where they actually dropped the money supply by damn near $1 trillion. And then they kind of bumped along even, until somehow we get to December of 2023. Now, you can pin it on an election, you can pin it on something. All of a sudden, we went right back to this 5%, now we're up to 5.5% or 6% growth in the money supply, which now we're above our COVID top. So any thought that these guys are fighting inflation, you know what? You believe that, you believe I'm going to be a jockey in a sixth race today. I mean, it's absolutely not true. And if you go to the European Union, go to UK, they're a little less, you go to Japan, you're going to find almost the exact same, Switzerland, the exact same start and the exact same date. So somehow or another, somebody is choreographing this. And I got news for you. It's not Biden. It's not Trump. It's somebody. Now, Japan is doing the same thing. Their interest rates went from less than 1 forever to like 1.6, which doesn't seem like much. It's a big deal for Japan. You know more about that than me. You know.
Oh, yeah.
And China, they're pushing along at 8. Well, 8 seems, like you just said, that's egregiously high. But you know what? It's only 2.5 points higher than the rest of us. It's not like we're at 1 and they're at 8. I mean, so right now, I mean, I think I could categorically say, I don't normally say this about anything, I can categorically say that the Fed right now is in a let's not let inflation going forward be too bad. We don't care if it's 3%. But by the way, we are not fighting the 40% bulge that we put in there 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And we don't give a rat's ass about all those people that are sucking whatever because of that. That's totally off the board for Trump, Biden, for anybody. Nobody is anxious of bringing the price of cars down from 80 grand to 60. That's totally off the table. Am I right or wrong? Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, you can't. I mean that you don't want to have a deflationary environment.
Well, why not?
Because large discretionary purchases start to get pushed off, and it makes your economy slow.
Well, okay, and by the way,
that's why, because you want economic activity. And one of the things that drives economic activity is, you know, you better buy something today because it might cost more, you know, a year or two down the road. I'm not saying that, you know, I totally agree with that as being the best incentive for economic activity. But on the other side of it, if, you know, if I'm thinking about replacing my car, but I believe that, you know what, if I'm thinking about replacing my car and I'm just kind of on the fence and I don't think it's going to go up in price, you know, the next year's version is not going to go up in price that much, I'm probably not going to be as aggressive as far as replacing my car. If I think they're going to go up by 5 or 10%, you know, that is going to be an incentive to step up and buy something now.
But that mentality gets you with your paycheck at noon. So you go to the store at lunchtime, like the Weimar Republic. Once you go too far,
it eventually can lead to that. But that's the, you know, that's the idea behind that, and which makes me wonder if I want to go off into the wilderness and come back with the big Nobel Prize winning idea, I think it would be around how do you manage economies with decreasing populations. And or stagnant populations and stagnant inflation, et cetera, because that's what they had in Japan for 20 or 30 years, and everybody thinks it's the end of the world. Everybody thinks it's the end of the world, but they seem to be a pretty happy people over there, and they don't seem to have a whole lot of social unrest or big problems, or you know, it appears on the surface to be a pretty decent country to live out your life in, regardless of how now. You know, and everything's relative, but that's just how it appears to me on the outside.
Well, I'm jousting with you here, but I agree with you. But if you say I'm not going to attack the 40% bubble that I put in here, mm-hmm. and I'm going to let people, just like our NVIDIA conversation, I'm going to let the economy grow into it. I'm going to have people gradually get raises ahead of the inflation going forward. The only fly in that ointment is if you and I decide to do that, and by the way, I think it's worth a chance. That's kind of what I would do if I was in charge. One thing I wouldn't do is say 3% inflation on top of that's now okay. No, it's not. Because the 3% now is ahead of the growth in wages on its own, let alone catching up before. I mean, I do everything I possibly could to make the inflation going forward now a half of 1% or zero. And that we've had plenty of times in this country where that has been fine. One of the most, again, a piece from Milton Friedman's book, and I've got one on here because you probably never read this chapter. We had a deflationary environment here in the years after the Civil War because they had issued something called the greenback, and the name, you know what that term meant? It was not backed by gold. The only thing it was backed by was the green on the back of the bill, hence the name greenback. So the government dragged those currencies out and replaced them with stuff that was, they went back on the gold standard because they wanted to enter. So you actually had a decrease in money supply of probably 3, 4, 5 years after Civil War, and it was a deflationary. It also was one of the times of the best growth we've ever had. And Milton Friedman has had in some of his pamphlets, that aren't one of his books, he used to write all these pamphlets, there was a place in India that did the same thing. You can have growth in a deflationary environment. I mean, it's not going to show up as growth monetarily, but your real growth can be positive. We're so hung up on this nominal growth versus real. I mean, you and I know that if your inflation's 5%, that you've got to deduct 5% from your growth, right, to find out what your real growth is. Which we don't do very well now, but
right.
You can actually have a slightly deflationary. I'm not talking about deflation like in the Depression when all of a sudden people lost their savings in the bank. That's not healthy. I mean, you and I agree on that. But these guys could go with a zero money supply growth for the next 5 years. We wouldn't know the difference. Might be a good thing.
It definitely would not be. I mean, it might create some unintended consequences, but in general, I think it's something that we would totally live through.
Well, I mean, who says that every time the stock market's supposed to go up 1% a day? Anybody think, I mean, I don't think you do, does anybody think that this is shrewd investing on our part and it's not just a degradation of the dollar?
No, it eventually catches up with you.
When's it they gonna come?
I mean, I don't know. That's the big question. If we could figure that one out, we'd be doing this with a Corona in our hand on the beach.
Yeah. There you go. I wouldn't be in the water though. Kenny Polcari's up. He's up in Boston. He was going out to Cape Cod, and I go, Kenny, careful! I heard of some shark attacks out there. He goes, they're further down the Cape. They're not near us. And I'm going, how do you know where the guy is? Anyway, but you ever been out there? It's a beautiful place. The Cape.
I've been to that. Your favorite DC reporter actually was up there this past weekend.
Oh wow! How far out did she go?
I have no idea. When she's out having fun, we don't hear as much from her when she's not.
Well, it's a long kick to the end.
I know.
I mean, to drive to Provincetown is we were staying about halfway out, and I think it had to be almost another hour out to Provincetown.
Yeah,
it's a ways. Gorgeous though. So are you teaching summer school here remotely?
I am teaching derivatives. Actually, I'm doing VIX this week.
Really?
Yeah. I tagged VIX onto the end of the derivatives class. It include a couple of chapters from one of the VIX books I wrote. My feeling is if you take derivatives from me and I spent so much time, teaching VIX, talking about VIX, et cetera, that it makes both me and the student look bad if they take derivatives from me and they can't at least explain VIX to their spouse.
Oh, I would agree.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of my attitude around it. But I incorporate it in a discussion about how implied volatility behaves, et cetera.
What do you make of this 30-year? I'm not a technical analyst of any kind, but this 5% number in a 10-year seems to have some people's attention, which doesn't make it a technical number. We went through it yesterday. We backed off this morning. Now we're creeping back up again. We're 4.998, so call it 5. Where does that have to go to cause a problem?
I don't think it's going to... I mean, I think it would need to reach like maybe another 0.5% up and would have people questioning whether we're going to get any kind of cut in the near future. But my understanding is there are some large countries that are very large entities that are taking down their exposure to our debt. And that's what I think is going on. I think that's where that number keeps getting bumped against and then backed off from, where you've got... I think it's more of some very large traders moving some things around as opposed to like a fundamental number that we're gonna be worried about. And I don't see a giant dump in bonds barring a big change in the fundamental, in the economic fundamentals that we're seeing, that's going to push that number much higher than 5%.
Okay, well,
I've actually been trading bond ETFs based on what you're talking about, where when we get up to 5% or so, you got to assume it's not going to go much higher as long. I'll see it bumping up around 5%, then I'll check and I'll look at what the derivatives are saying, what it looks like the Fed's going to do, and if that number hasn't changed very much, I'll take a look at taking advantage of that move.
Well, we've bounced back off 5% in the 30 several times now, maybe even including right now. But I guess the next question is a simple one. I kind of knew with Carl a little bit about. I don't know when we got this year-over-year inflation number. We never did that. When I was younger, it was this month times 12 is your inflation number, or maybe the last 2 months times 6 or something. I don't really care what happened a year ago, but it's, that's me. If you take yesterday's number, 0.3 times 12 is 3.6, right? So let's say, for instance, the inflation going forward that the Fed is sort of happy with, or maybe they're not happy with, but they're going to let happen. Say it's 3.5%. What should the 30-year rate be?
A couple of percent ahead of that.
Yeah, so we're talking 5.5.
But over the next 30 years, is it going to be that high?
Why would
the assumption is it'll probably get back down closer to 1.5 or 2.
I guess my question is why. Why is that the assumption?
Why is that? Because they target, because supposedly they, whoever they are, target 2%.
Okay. I mean,
I mean, really.
I know you're right, but I'm saying I don't. Yeah. From what I see happening right now, I'm not talking about the CPI because you know God
right,
knows what.
Right. No, I know.
I'm just, but that's
where that number. I've gotten that question in the classroom.
And what do you say?
But because you talk about. When you're teaching some of this stuff academically, you say that the biggest impact on interest rates or expected interest rates is expected inflation. That's the number that academically you're supposed to be overcoming when you're in a fixed income instrument. So yeah, if the long term belief for the 30-year is it looks like it's a pretty low number, well, that's because there's a belief that we're going to go back to a long, long, long period of time where inflation was not a problem.
I'm going to say
we had a long period of time. We've talked about this on this show about before we got the most the most recent kind of, and I don't really think it was that much of a bout with inflation. It was short-lived, and it wasn't nearly the kind of situation that we've seen in the past. That's what makes me wonder if we've got another bout coming.
I would push back on that, but before that,
when I would try to talk about it in the classroom, undergrads would look at me like I had three heads.
I could come up with some numbers that would seriously refute what you just said. And I'm going to say, if you look at 2000 through 2020, well, I actually broke it up, 2000, 2008, and then after 2008. I mean, I think before 2008, our growth in the money supply was 4.5% per year, and after that, it was higher. It was pushing 6%. And they claim we had no inflation all along there. But if you look at the medical piece, which nobody really pays attention to because most people are insured, right? As a matter of fact, the lady on last week was talking about how when she had a baby, her out-of-pocket was different than another lady who had a baby. And she never really mentioned the gross number, what the bill was for the hospital, which is pretty interesting the way she talked about it, because that's the way most people think about it. But really, it's the... If you were to take... 2000, 2020, and I honestly believe this, Russell. I mean, hopefully I believe the stuff I say. If you were to take the medical piece of the CPI and raise it from 6.5% of people's basket to the probably average part of the GDP, somewhere between 15 and 20 over those 20 years, if you raise that number up to 18, we had inflation every year higher than growth, and you could say we were in a 20-year recession. If you just made one change, it's not even messing with higher education, taxes, and home ownership. If you add those in, you had to get a totally different picture of the world than the CPI gives you. Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, I don't think anybody can really refute that one.
Now you can take your cell phone bill. In 2000 was way more than it was in 2020. There's stuff that went the other way, right?
Right, but not, no.
Well, cardigan sweaters are down what? They're down.
Oh, my gosh. And I can't even find any with skulls on them anymore. I got to find something new.
This is bull, I say. But the numbers, if you look at them, depending on how you look at them, and the thing of it is, we have people that are hate Trump, hate Biden, hate this guy, hate that guy. You know, Carl got me into this, even though I argue with Carl about every subject there is. If you look at the numbers over the last 30 years, you can't even pick out who's president and who isn't.
It does, regardless of how divided it all looks, when it comes down to certain things, it really doesn't make a difference who's in there, does it?
Well, the same people seem to get ahead, the same people don't.
And whoever's upset about it just depends on if they're on your team or not. Doesn't really matter about what they're doing, does it?
Well, yeah. And we talked this morning. I'm going to go into it now. We only got a minute left, but we talked this morning about the Epstein situation. And I don't envy Trump here.
Oh gosh! I had the most clever thing that I wanted to say with respect to the Epstein situation. Darn it! I'm going to say it right now. Do you think maybe they're going to sacrifice the Clintons to get Trump?
Who's they?
I don't know. Whoever really knows what's on the list.
What do you think about the money?
If Trump's holding it back, then there must be something that he doesn't want out there. But at the same time, everybody kind of, you know, the general consensus is that Bill Clinton may have visited the island a couple of times. You know, is there stuff in there that, you know, the Dems are willing to sacrifice some of their own to get at Trump on this thing?
I think, well, listen.
Yeah, do you see what I'm saying?
We got a dash, but I'll question uh-huh. maybe. Do you think it's an individual problem or it's a money problem? When I say that,
I think it's a money problem.
I mean, what if?
I
listened to it again. This is all just rumor because we don't put the facts out. Rumors fly, right? This guy was convinced that was holding everybody back. Is the funding came from essentially the Mossad and the CIA?
Yeah, there's apparently a belief that there's some nefarious type of stuff like that going on, and that's why we'll never know the, you know, the true extent of everything that's happening.
But did I send you that thing?
If I didn't send
it to you, I will. That thing from Wired magazine where they got everybody's phone numbers.
Uh huh.
They went there. If they've got them, other people might. You know what's weird is what? They could trace all those numbers back to the cities in the U.S. You can't in Europe. You can't trace anybody's stuff. I mean, the governments probably can, but nobody else can. I guess here, if you know...
It's not divided up like ours are.
No, you just... They won't let you. I don't know how to do it, but evidently, you can go on the net, and you can find your phone records. Or actually, maybe not yours personally, but if you pick a place... This is between the two islands, the little shuttle service. Mm-hmm. These are all the people that use their cell phones between the two islands.
Oh, well, that's a pretty easy back into, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. They went to the city. The guy wouldn't give anybody's names, but...
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know if it was you and I, do we really want to blow all this up? But then again, if we say we're going to and we don't, then we got a problem like Trump does.
That's the problem. It's one of the few things that he's, you know, when he's campaigning that he said that he has totally reversed himself on.
Well, they're still withholding.
Yeah, totally reversed himself on. I mean, done exactly the opposite of what he said.
Well, how many people have campaigned saying they're going to let loose all the Kennedy stuff, and then they never do? There's got to be a name
exactly.
in there. There's got to be a human error.
What about the freaking aliens?
Well, it's got to be
somebody. It's the same thing. I mean, Clinton said he was going to tell us all about the alien stuff, and he didn't.
Yeah, maybe until he finally found out maybe he had some or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, SP Futures up 12, NASDAQ Futures up 50. are you in Indianapolis? Are you driving down? What are you doing?
No, I'm sitting in my kitchen.
All right, well. With the two pooches?
With two pooches who are doing very, very well. They don't like the heat very much, but they're doing very well.
When I go for a walk on Saturday, I was out at it was before 7. Everybody's out there with their dogs.
You know,
trying to.
Yeah, you gotta. If you're gonna get the walk in, you gotta do. Oh, I said the wrong word in front of them.
Oh God, don't say that.
If you get that thing, because they can't spell it. If you get the WALKN,
you think they can't spell it. Anyway. Andrew, nice job. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.